What's up, everybody? Welcome to Value Town. I'm here with Chanman V, joined today by three guys you know very well in the community. Team owners, casters, players, all that good stuff. Raynad, Savitz, Noxious, welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks.
Good beer.
Yeah, new Raynad, sheriff in Value Town, guys. Raynad. But we got a lot of great topics to talk about today. Gonna kick things off with some community talk. I kind of hinted at it last week, but I really want to talk a little bit more about things going on in the community on Value Town. We've always focused so much on just the game that I kind of want to add that. We'll still do our card talk, deck talk, meta talk, like we do each and every week, but wanted to infuse some community talk too. But great to have the three guys here, or three of you guys here. I think it's a pretty good mix of just a lot of the different kind of topics we can talk about having, you know, just, again, just not having just players on the show. Wanted to kick things off, though, by talking about the Blizzard EU, or just Blizzard Championships. So EU and I think Asia happened this past week. And Savitz, you had like a front row seat casting the EU Championships. So what are your thoughts on it?
No, I was just like the exact words that I was going to. It was pretty good. The arena was amazing. It was actually the live audience that showed up in Prague was mind-blowing. I've been to a lot of Hearthstone events, but I've never seen anything quite like that. I throw down Twitter out a picture, which I also retweeted if anybody wants to take a look at what exactly was going on. There was so many people that showed up. It was incredible, and all the matches were really great. In the end, it was Thais walking away from us, the winner, but top four. So top four qualified to BlizzCon, including Nairia, Life Coach, and Ostkaka as well. And out of the eight players that we had there, I think that the four most popular and well-known ones made it through. So that should make for an exciting BlizzCon too.
Yeah, definitely. From an entertainment standpoint, it's good to have, you know, players that everybody knows. Obviously, there's always good to have some unknown players too to try to make a name for themselves. But yeah, EU is just definitely pretty well-known folks. Ostkaka being probably the least known, but even that, he's just been so good for so long that people know him at this point.
Really? I don't know. Maybe he's less known. I've been casting a lot of his stuff and watching a lot of his stuff, so maybe I'm like the exception. But I've seen him around a lot more these days than a long time ago.
Yeah, definitely. Did you guys catch the Life Coach Pavel match?
Yeah,
and Noxious. What'd y'all think of that? I mean, of course that was like a mistake, but having that happen just like at that moment, I mean, that was pretty unbelievable.
That was insane. I didn't cast the match, but I was watching it, and that was like one of the most memorable moments that we ever had in a match with such high stakes. It was such a simple mistake, too. We had been discussing it a lot that Pavel was playing quite fast in the earlier matches, but he was still making great plays, and it didn't seem to affect his gameplay. It was not that he was playing fast and making a lot of mistakes, but it was something that we felt like, okay, maybe he should slow down a little, and now he like kind of paid the ultimate cost for playing so fast.
Yeah, that was unfortunate. Raynad, what'd you think?
I've seen it happen one other time at WCA, if anyone remembers. A guy had like an Alakir and a Totem, or he had like a Sylvanas to trade in or something, and he like plays Alakir first when his only minion is a Totem. Trades in Sylvanas then, wins the coin flip because there's no god, and then hits him for lethal with Alakir. So it was, the other guy had Sylvanas.
That's pretty amusing though.
But... So the guy has a totem. Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember the exact situation. All I know is he like played Alakir into Sylvanas when he could have killed it without doing that, and then wins the flip and wins the game. It was crazy.
Oh man.
This time justice was served, so I'm happy.
But yeah, I mean, it wasn't the deciding. It was the deciding game for Life Coach, right? Him being up 2-1. But yeah, it's pretty. That was pretty heartbreaking for Pavel there. Pressure, right? Pressure will do that too.
I'm the worst player under pressure, and I don't even qualify for events. One of the things that I hate about Hearthstone is probably the whole competitive scene, just because I can't handle just having to focus that much. Mm-hmm. And the only event I attended that was live was like WCA in 2014, I think, and it was like, I had the exact same brain fart, like a similar level of brain fart. It was just like, you stare at the screen, you know what you're going to do, and you just completely screw it up. And yeah, I can relate, at least, to an extent.
Yeah, Tice winning the EU Championship, he's been on fire lately. You know, the team Hillam obviously winning the ATLC, and then now you know, him winning this. Has this been pretty much overdue for Tyfe, do you think? You know, for a while he was obviously started his career, right, winning a ton of just online tournaments, and then you know, just kind of slowly getting onto the scene, you know, getting invited to all the tournaments, and now he's just starting to win almost everything he enters now. So I don't know, what do you guys think of Tyfe? We had him on the show, like, you know, a couple weeks ago.
Well, I actually don't think that he was, like, winning all that much from the beginning of his career. He did well at the King of the Hill thing, and then, like, he had a lot of solid results from tournaments, like top fours and that kind of stuff. He did win a DreamHack Bucharest event, but that was one of the smaller events back then, from out of the live events.
Yeah, definitely.
One of the most consistent players over the years that the Hearthstone has existed. He's always been playing so well, always so consistent. Very few mistakes ever when you watch him play. If you look at his Gozu Gamers like statistics, just at his win rates, I think it's the most ridiculous one that anyone has in competitive matches. It's something like almost 70%.
70%. Really, really, oh my gosh, that is pretty crazy.
Yeah, so people go up and down. You'll find that sometimes, you know, a player will be at like 66 to 70%, and then they'll fluctuate down, and somebody else will pick up. Like they get like one crazy event. So it tends to be the case that you have a few players at the top who have kind of, you know, they just exchange spots on the ladder on Ghost of Gamers. But Tyfe has been, I mean, I feel like Nihilim together, like the entire team seems to work really well this year. Like Life Coach had his big start in 2015. Like he'd been doing, you know, pretty well the previous year, but now he just kind of skyrocketed, and Tyfe is following suit. And RDU, you know, being on the same team, of course, that gives him probably, you know, he's a part of the show, basically.
Yeah, I mean, definitely the team as a whole, and you know, you hear about them practicing a lot, you know, just practicing together, you know, and I think that's one of the reasons. Not to say that all the other teams don't. I mean, all the other teams obviously practice. I'm sure Liquid does and Tempo Storm does, but at least it's more transparent how much they practice. Okay, maybe not. Maybe not.
No, they don't. They don't. Nobody does.
Nobody Man, does. We okay. do, and then I don't know. Like the meta kind of goes in these rotations of. Where it's like figured out, sort of, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah.
For all the way through to BlizzCon, I think that plus or minus one deck, the like Handlock Druid Patron lineup is just like it's so objectively strong. I don't like you can replace one of those decks with Secret Paladin and you have like a slightly weaker lineup, but still pretty good. But basically, like, you can practice, but at the end of the day, the highest win percentage lineup is going to be that, and then the person who draws the best with that in a given tournament is usually going to win, which I think is the case with what happened in the Europe Championships. Not that they're not great players. It's like it's awesome that known players advanced in Europe, and I do think Nihilim probably has the... I would say they have like the strongest lineup right now because they... All of them focus on the game, you know, not as much streaming. They all, or even when Life Coach streams, he's focusing on the game and improving. They all put a lot of hours into it. They all practice a lot. So, like, I think in Hearthstone, the best team is the one that tries the hardest in, like, a given time period. But I also think that edge is, like, not that big most of the time that you get from being the, try-hardiest team, if that makes sense. A 20% edge is huge, though. I mean, if you're getting, like, a 70% win rate, I don't think most people are. I think most, like, the best players usually get, like, 65, 66. It's usually like 15% edge, but it's still pretty big in a tournament. But yeah, he played the best lineup. He played it well as always. Like it's awesome that he won. I'm really glad. The I know like the Americas tournament so far had a lot of upsets, a lot of like sketchy plays, and then like the person misplaying ended up winning a lot. But it's cool to see that like in Europe, it felt like the better player won most games. Mm-hmm. It's just it was cool to watch.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit about that last week with Purple, that the American Championship seems to be a lot of a lot of the favored players seem to be out of the tournament, but the Americas, that's going to be happening this coming weekend. Asia actually finished too this past week with Krenich winning it. I didn't quite catch the others who won it because I wasn't quite following it, but I did see that Krenich won, which didn't surprise me. He's been a good player for a while now, too. But how much do you guys know about the Asian scene there? We talked a little bit last week, right, Reynad, about just a few of those players that you saw in the lineup.
Yeah, the Asian scene. I mean, I usually ask Eloise for advice about that whole scene. She knows, like, it's good. She knows all the unknown good players. And by the way, Krenich is one of the, he's Korean, right? He's one of the only Korean players I know.
That's right.
Yeah, we spent we spent a couple days together in China for one of their events there and got to talk a lot. So yeah, he's definitely good. I mean, yeah, it's cool to see him advance. I do think though that like just because a player's name is known, it doesn't like automatically mean he's better than some unknown player. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But most of the time, there's like a correlation because the unknown player would have like made his name known somewhere, right? If he was like much better. But yeah, it's. I want to know about China mostly. That's what I'm curious about. From what I heard, from Eloise at least, the qualification process wasn't like with us. It was pretty hard to qualify. You had to go through a lot of stages, a lot of steps and stuff. Mm-hmm. From the China scene, from what I heard, they just had like this one tournament, basically.
One tournament. And, wow. Okay.
Yeah, more or less. Or it was just a lot like fewer steps. So it was a lot of random players, and the only known player in the top eight was Tiddler. So I, not that those players are bad though. Like personally, I think China is the strongest region, and I think it has been for a long time. But it'll be cool to see like some unknown Chinese players play and see how that goes. I'm definitely excited for it. And I think Ping also advanced, right? So that's
Like, what's the player base like, by the way, like in China? Is it that much bigger than it is here? Because if you look at the amount of people that we, you know, that we see here at top 10, let's say, at the end of every ladder season, you tend to see very similar names crop up. Is that the same, like, the same case over there? Or is there, like, a bigger shuffle?
It's pretty much, I mean, it's sort of the same case. There's just way more, like, in the NA scene, we have, like, say, like, 12 players, 10 players or something you might have heard of. And in China, there's like, you know, 120 players.
There's
that
2 billion people in China. There should be. Right. There should be a lot more people playing over there. And it'd be interesting to see what the population of Hearthstone players are from China.
Yeah. The thing is that more of them are competitive, and this is a kind of microtransaction game, which they eat up over there. Mm-hmm. It's hugely popular. The people who play it are way competitive. And like the competitive scene is just more established than the rest of the world easily. Like in Europe and NA, it's usually like the same group of 20 to 30 people that kind of rotates based on the size of the prize pool. Some people accept or decline, plus some invites. And then in China, though, it's not the same people every tournament. Those tournaments are massive. You know, they have hundreds of people. I think China runs more tournaments than the rest of the world combined. So for them, like, it's annoying for them that BlizzCon was like not the best qualification process, but at the end of the day, it doesn't matter because in the next like month, they can have a BlizzCon worth of prize money in just, you know, like four events. Like every weekend, a ton of money up. So it's really just way more established.
Yeah. This, what about the Team Celestial thing and like Tiddler and guys? I noticed that they added like 20 players to their lineup. They now have around 25 or 30.
What? They have 30 players in their team?
Around that. I didn't exactly count, but it was something between 20 and 30, yes.
Well, that's not their main roster, though. They have the Celestial League, sort of, where they have, you know, 20 to 30 people who kind of play these in-house tournaments, and then you can get, like, promoted up to the main roster.
Oh, okay. That's cool. It's like a developmental type of setup there. Okay, that's cool. I was going to say like 30 people. Can you imagine that team house? It's like a giant frat house. Exactly. No, but that's definitely... Yeah, I'm excited to see... Just get to know, you know, these Asian players more. Any thoughts on picking up more Asian players right now?
It's tough because as a team owner, it's not like... I don't know. Like, I wouldn't... As much as I think, like, let's say I think Nihilum is the best roster, which I do think they're, like, the strongest. Mm-hmm. That's not the kind of roster I would ever sign because marketability matters so much, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's hard to sign more Asian players because they're not marketable unless they speak reasonably good English. It's really tough for them to be. So that really limits your options. And I don't know of a Chinese... Like, most of the Chinese players don't speak English. Most of the best Chinese players don't. Tiddler speaks a decent amount, but yeah, it just limits the options a lot as, like, a Western team owner, I guess.
Well, I guess just because you're a Western team owner doesn't mean you can't try to have, you know, just a base in China, right?
Right,
I mean,
right.
You could try to just make somebody really popular over there versus over here, and that's
at some point.
Yeah,
believe it or not, Chinese teams play with more money. Like, they have huge investors backing them. Like, it's, I think the richest person in China owns a league team. Like, the literal richest person in that country owns a league
really?
team.
Really? Wow.
And yeah, I don't know. It's a crazy scene. But most of the best players are signed, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. All right, so yeah, Blizzard, again, this is the kind of the main storyline. It's going to move on, or it's going to continue with America this weekend. And that should, I think, wrap things up, right, from the standpoint of all the participants for BlizzCon. I believe I think that would be the last region. So yeah, I think it's who's going to be. No. Are you going to be? Are somebody going to be? Who's going to be casting this weekend?
This weekend in NA. Yeah, I'm flying to San Francisco tomorrow. I'm just stopping by at home for 2 days and streaming a little bit.
Okay.
So tomorrow I'm flying to San Francisco. We're going to have myself, Brian Gibler. It's going to be Vertune from Blizzard. Frodon.
Okay.
And I think Seltzer will be hosting. And
it's usually
somebody else casting still. Let me think. I think Amaz probably, yeah.
Okay. All right. Good lineup there. Should be a lot of fun, and it's going to be at the Foundry, right? Yeah, the Folsom Street Foundry, right?
It's this weekend, right?
Yeah, it's this weekend.
Yep, this weekend.
It's a great venue. If you guys have never been there,
I think I'm casting it too.
Right?
Oh, that'd be cool.
You think you're casting it?
Oh, okay. I like that. Right now, I'm not sure. I'm not too sure.
Yeah,
that's cool. I can't remember quite. It's possible. Yeah,
that's funny. No, I'm not sure either. I think so though. I think
yeah. No, that'd be great. I mean, awesome. all of you guys there. It's gonna be perfect. I think for all the viewers. But yeah, the venue's great. So if you guys are local too, man, go check it out. Because or if you've never been to Foundry, it's actually a really good place for just to hang out, grab a beer as a gamer too. See, next up, though, Collegiate Hearthstone Championship. So that started up last week or two also, just with right. North American colleges for the most. That's all I've seen so far, and they've been doing this three-man team kind of playing each other. Been kind of interesting. I've always been an advocate of the college scene, just having college leagues and that sort of thing, just because college sports is huge right in the U.S. So, you know, college esports seems to be in that. I mean, the college demographic is perfect, I think, for our game and everything too. So that's going on too. I think ESL is hosting up that. You should guys check that out. TESPA, I think TESPA, ESL is doing the production. If your school is participating in it, check that out too. It's pretty cool. You can go to compete.tespa.org to find out some more information about that. And then lastly, so some news with just, you know, a player that we all know joining team. So Dog joining Liquid. So one of your teammates would be it. So how do you feel about Dog? We had Dog on the day, the night before he announces this, right? So I was just like, dude, why didn't you just wait for the show? But he said, no, I had to actually travel the next day, and they wanted to announce it on the next day, but that would have been fun. But yeah, what do you think about Dog, new teammate?
Well, I'm almost really, really happy about it. We are good friends with Dog, and I couldn't be more excited.
Yeah.
I talked with him a bunch before the signing, and I really think he's a perfect fit for the team. Everyone from Team Liquid as well, like from owners to managers to everyone, just thinks that for our team, Dog is perfect. And I think that, well, I guess time will show, but I'm pretty sure that's going to be the case.
Yeah, he seemed actually really excited when I talked to him. I mean, he left Complexity to go to Liquid, so of course, we talked about
teammate.
It a bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, former teammate. But I feel like in Hearthstone, you know, everyone in the scene's kind of in a little family, right? Like, there's no... It doesn't seem like the teams matter, but ultimately people want the best for each other. There's no... I haven't really noticed too much animosity between players. Where in, well, there is some, but granted, it's kind of... It's not rampant. Like it would be in some of the other games that I've seen. So
yeah.
I kind of like that.
Yeah, there's zero drama about anything, about the change. Basically, just what happened was his contract with Complexity ended, and he chose to join us. So if somebody wants drama, sorry, there's none.
Yeah. All right, yeah. Anyways, really happy, you know, happy that Dog's just in a what he thinks is, you know, just a better situation for himself. So that's really, really cool. Okay, so let's talk. Have a discussion topic here that I know it's been a very popular discussion for a while now, or at least some kind of version of it. But recently, there's been some just at the championships. There's even more sentiments about just the tournament formats, right? The Conquest format just really being stale. You know, like we're seeing the same decks all the time. We're kind of just seeing. You know, just the, like, for lack of better words, just lack of strategy involved, you know, in terms of, you know, picking decks and what to play beforehand. It's just everybody just playing whatever kind of gives you the highest percentage win rate. And that's kind of what Reynad was talking about earlier. what do you guys think right now? Like, what are all your opinions right now on just the tournament format situation?
Who wants to start?
All right, yeah, you can go ahead. I know you have a lot of thoughts.
I think all of you just have a lot to say.
Just do it.
I don't even know where to start. I'm just like
Start with Patreon.
Just start with the format. Let's start with Conquest. Let's start with Conquest.
Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Conquest? Patreon? Which one?
Let's start with Conquest, and I'm sure Patreon will work its way into the... But yeah. Let's talk about that. So Conquest has been the most popular format for a year now, at least a year now. And, you know, outside of maybe some team tournaments and that sort of thing, we haven't really seen anything like... No more last class, you know, hero standing, that sort of stuff, or at least not as many of those. So Conquest, what do you think of the state of Conquest right now?
Okay, let's start with that. So I think Conquest needs to go. A lot of people, ever since it was introduced, were like kind of like, I don't like that format, I think it's a bad format. But the issues that are arising right now are like so severe with just having the same deck so much, like Druid, Warlock, Patrons. Mm-hmm. Even in the future, if some of those decks, like one of them fades away, I think we're going to be stuck with another like similar type of lineup and a lot of repeats. So I think it's absolutely mandatory that we move back into some kind of ban format. It can be anything. It can be like Conquest with one ban. It can be Last Hero Standing. I don't even care. I just want to see a ban.
Yeah, I agree. I can agree with that for sure.
I think the problem with Conquest is like the optimal way to have a lineup is you just play like the three highest win percentage things, or the ones that have the highest win percentage across the board, or the decks you're most likely to see. And there's not much like strategy that goes into it. Like, you just pick the decks that are the best, and then you play them, and you hope, you think a little bit, or you don't, when you try to pick the order you play them, and hopefully you get the good matchups, and hopefully you draw well. And that's the strategy. So it becomes a very random format, and I think that they're, like... The problem is everyone's like, okay, well, Conquest sucks, but what's better? And nobody ever has a good solution,
right?
Really. I think that a format that would showcase skill more is a format that hurts the viewer experience a lot, to be honest. I think that the nice thing about Conquest is it's a lot like Ladder. You pick the decks that are the best online, drool a little on the table and click stuff and hope you win. And that's really relatable because people can take the decks from those lineups and win with them. But as soon as you introduce a format with like bans and stuff, then the decks start being built in very warped ways often. So that kind of like the other extreme end of the spectrum where the better player wins the most, I think the format would be like really complicated. There'd be a lot of, it would be something like Via Game maybe, or something where there's just a lot of stuff going on so that there's more room to make errors if you're a bad player. Because like when you're thinking about nine classes and stuff, you have to keep all these like win percentages in your mind. For every deck, you have to keep in mind like 8 or 9 win percentages against other decks. And, you know, that's like a lot of numbers to keep track of and a lot of game experience that you need to properly execute a ban phase with like 9 classes. So I think like the best player winning would happen more often in a complicated ban format where a bunch of stuff's going on. And then I think that Conquest, where there's like no banning and just you just play stuff that's good, that's going to have a lot more random results usually. And there's probably like a happy medium, but it would be something pretty boring, like Conquest with one ban or something. You know, I don't think they would make a huge jump right away. They would do a slight shift.
Well, so you don't think what I'm taking from that is you're saying that it wouldn't be as relatable, like having something more complex for the viewers. But Via Game, if I remember correctly, that was a success, right? That event went really well. I think the community enjoyed that event, and I don't think there were very many complaints about the format.
Yeah, for like the hardcore Hearthstone watching audience, there aren't. But for something like BlizzCon, where we're going to break 200,000 viewers, and for half of the people, it's their first time watching Hearthstone or watching a Hearthstone tournament, they are not going to want to watch a 9-class ban system that they can't wrap their head around. They're going to be overwhelmed and they're going to tune out. So for BlizzCon, it's a very different story. It's a different viewer base. It's not like the established community. We're actually like the minority for that event. So I don't know. People have to kind of keep that in mind. And I think that like the way I would do it, I think the best like purest format in Hearthstone is probably like no deck submissions. Like you build a deck and then you play a game and then you leave the challenge screen and you build another deck and then you play a game. And it's just like Ladder. People can screenshot your decks, or people can work it into the overlay. It's like very pure, and it scares a lot of other pros because they can't game a ban system. They can't grind for 12 hours a day and net deck like whatever best three decks they can. They have to like think on the spot and adapt. And there's a lot of like mind games that go on with that. Is he going to play the same deck twice in a row because it has the best win percentage? Or, you know, so I think that would be what I would do. But that's,
I mean, I definitely like that sort of premise of being able to change decks, you know, between game to game. I do still like the heroes. There's some being some kind of parameters around, you know, the heroes you can use, so that there's at least some strategy. There's some strategy to planning, because if you can play any random deck, then it could be just kind of random, except for the possible mind games. You know, just that, you know, the mind games, is he going to play the same deck or not?
Well, right now you play three decks that you know your opponent is going to play. The Druid,
yeah,
Handlock, Patron.
Absolutely, that's not good.
And it's still random. So I don't think that, like, knowing what classes your opponent has to play reduces the randomness at all. I think that, I don't know. I think that that kind of format is a lot more interesting than people give credit to. They're just kind of scared of the unknown and scared of, like,
running into it. It's like a big sideboard. Like, when you think about it, really, it's like you have, you know, unbound sideboard. Just do whatever the hell you want with your deck.
Exactly.
Somebody I remember brought up the idea that you could bring a class, and within the class you do anything you want. But that's like, that might be viable, say, you know, a year down the line when every class has multiple archetypes. Right now, you know, some of them do. You know, you have about like two archetypes per class on average. I mean, at least. But it, like, you'll pick Warlock if you're going to bring a class that has the ability to sideboard everything. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, it's still, you're still in a position right now where like a full blown sideboard with just naming a class wouldn't make sense. So you either have to go all the way, or if you make like a smaller sideboard, like four cards, then the question still stays of, you know, are the tech cards even good enough to counter some of the best decks right now? And to some extent, you could say that they really don't help that much.
You would see so much Warlock in that kind of format. I think it's a huge issue. Other than that, I really like it. If we were seeing a variety, but I fear that it would be like 9 out of 10 Warlocks in that case.
I mean, we could do a hybrid of all those things. We could do...
oh, damn. Go ahead.
I mean, we could do... I don't know. Here's an idea. Conquest, basically, with more than three classes. I'd like to see more than three classes. And I understand the reason why there's three classes, because it's more of a production, I think, limitation, trying to show every match and that sort of thing to the viewers. But if you could even get to five, and then you could switch what, you know, maybe the classes are still like five unique classes, but you can switch between whatever class decks. Something like the Warlock, right? You could play a Zulok, just as an example, Zulok versus, and then the next game, say you have to play it again, you can switch it to a Handlock if you think it's a, you know, a better matchup type of thing. Mm-hmm. I think that's better. It's not the perfect fix, but I think it's probably a little easier, or just an easier fix for
Maybe you can't play the same class twice in a row. Then there's strategy.
Right.
And
okay.
Then, you know,
yeah.
You know, I can play a deck that loses to every Warlock because he can't play Warlock again.
Yeah, that's true. I think that would be.
What about something like five decks and just go like pick one, ban one, pick one, ban one? Then we say like, I don't know.
Doesn't make any sense. So
you
each
could
person
at least add some like variety and strategy.
Two ban phases.
Yeah, because you can like ban twice, and it's simple enough that it doesn't really like take a long time or confuse anyone.
Yeah, I guess I'm just worried about like the rank 25 player just like finish the tutorial. He's gonna tune into BlizzCon, watch some people play Hearthstone, and there's like all these red X's happening, and he's like,
that,
"What? Everyone has five decks."
I mean, that happens in League.
Why can't he ban that stuff?
I mean, just like, I mean, with the banning, like the banning process for a noob.
Right, but the thing about League, when people play League, that ban process happens. It's in the game, right?
Okay, that's true.
Yeah. So what you're saying is we need tournament lobbies to get people used to the idea of a tournament format with rules in them.
You just play pure Hearthstone. You have a collection, and you build a deck with it, and then you play the deck.
I agree with Reyna that something like the Via Game House Cup format could never be used in BlizzCon, and for BlizzCon, the Conquest is much more suitable. I hope the Via Game, if they do another cup, that they're going to stick to their format, because it's really cool. But I think that... like slightly adjusting it, maybe adding more strategy into it would still be easily enough understood by the viewers. So it has to be like something in between. And I don't know what the perfect format would be. It would require a lot of thought, but it should be slightly more rewarding.
Let's do the last lineup standing. So we have like a best of five, and you have three lineups, and you can reuse the same lineup after you've won with one, right? Is that the way we have to do it now? Just like hybridize everything.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a kind of worms because I like Swiss a lot, like for card games. The problem is it's really unmanageable as far as organizing tournaments. You can do it and organize it, but as far as viewership, you don't get to follow everything that happens. The organizers have to pick like one game that they want to cast at once or one match, and then you end up with a huge disparity. Well, you know, if there's enough contestants, then you have some people who want to drop because they've already lost at some point during the entire thing, so they know they can't get in the top, let's say top three, and they're just gonna stop playing or stop caring, which means that as a viewer you have no enjoyment watching those guys. And it's kind of difficult to implement Swiss in Hearthstone, but I really wish there was a clean way to do it.
I think it's a pretty good format.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think about just the limitation of having to show all the matches? Do you think that's super do you think that is a requirement right now for Hearthstone events?
Not all, though. You don't have to, but I think people expect to see some of their matches, at least.
Well, of course some. I mean, of course some. It's just, I feel like, you know, a lot of these brackets are limited in sizes or even just, you know, limited in the format, just how many decks you can bring, purely because they want to be able to show, you know, like 8 hours, 9 hours of the event, and they want to be able to show all the matches. I know I took that into account whenever I organized a couple events.
This is getting a little bit sidetracked, but I wanted to bring it up, that actually, like, about streaming all the matches, I think it really should happen, at least on some kind of, like, B streams and stuff, because
yeah.
What happened to me in DreamHack Summer this year was that I was on the stream for my first match, or was it the second match, and then for the third game, I was up against a Warlock. I had a Warlock in my lineup, I was on the stream, he knew what I was playing, he had a Warlock. I had no clue what Warlock he was playing, so when we match up the Warlocks, he knew what the Mulligan format I didn't because I was on the stream.
Oh, I see. So there wasn't a fairness of even just information available, right?
Yeah, so it's like that kind of issues also need to be taken into consideration.
Yeah, a lot of tournaments have that problem, though. I think the only solution is like if a player that was on camera is... If a player that was on camera is involved in a match, then the deck list should be shown to each player, maybe. Then he could tell his friends what's in everyone's deck after the match. And it's like there's no clean solution, really.
Well, the clean solution is not having to have to play those decks that you submitted, right? Having being able to switch them up.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's another way to fix that issue.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, I think you just like expose all the deck lists after they're submitted. I think that would be fine. No just processing. Put it all out there. Like, why not? There's not that many like surprises, really. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the whole process of submitting is really annoying, too. I mean, some people don't, like, do it in time, and they, you know, they'll stall for, like, 12 hours and get extra time to practice. And then some people will, legitimately cheat in things like ESL Cups where, you know, they'll submit something and then change it as they play.
Yeah.
It's just, like, it adds all of this. Like, you're restricting yourself as a player that wants to play fairly, but then there's, like, always this risk that they're not, your opponent's not doing the same. I don't know. I think like not the whole process of submitting is it's stupid that that's considered mandatory for some reason. And then I think that for tournaments, I think it's kind of ridiculous that it's expected to have every match streamed. Like you will still have 9 hours of content with a good mix of unknown players and pros if you do a Swiss format. I mean, you know, you have your three games that are being recorded, one of them streamed at a time. If they finish early, you switch on to one of the other games. And, I mean, that's just a pretty clean way to do it, I think. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I agree.
I mean, I like Swiss more than anything else, so I have to agree. It's just that the problems we ran into initially when Hearthstone came out, you know, when the whole tournament format discussions started, like in alpha or beta even, the time constraint of Swiss, to some extent, was an issue. But then again, as you said, you don't have to show everything. And the problem you're running into is that some matches, like as you said, you know, you have to take some of the bigger names if you want to show their match. You have to record their game, so they have to be recording it themselves in some way, and then that has to be broadcast or queued after something else. So you'd have to do a lot more pre-recording, which is an organizer issue. It's not so much, you know, a viewer one. Viewer wouldn't care too much, I think.
So, mm-hmm. Well, you could like leverage it. Community streamers too.
Yeah,
I mean, that's what other games do, right? StarCraft did it, and I know even some of the other bigger games do the same thing. Just grab some community streamers that are like willing to help for free, you know, volunteer, and they'd love to, and just have them show some of those games that aren't, you know, basically scheduled for the mainstream.
The cool thing is the spectator mode makes it so easy, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
The tournament could be happening somewhere, and some guy at home from the community can, you know, message them and say, hey, add me in the game, and then all of a sudden he can broadcast that game.
No, they did that for Prague. Like, the matches that were not on the mainstream were on community streams.
Yeah.
I think every single one of them. Thing.
Those were different language streams, though, right? If I...
No, it was actually an English
stream. Oh, they were all English? Oh, okay, I didn't realize
there was an English B stream showing, like, all the matches that we couldn't show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They had multiple languages, you're right. Like, they had a French guy, they had, you know, an English guy, they had Russian as well. So, it's like, really, they tried to make it so everybody could watch it at some point or on some channel. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't really... I was supposed to cast some of the games, but I ended up not having time. Apparently, they were giving, you know, people clean feeds. So, everybody could do that with just about any tournament. That was, like, one of the times that it's been done. But, you know, you mentioned StarCraft 2. That was a pretty big success over there. Like, people just like getting the games into their hands and commentating over it. So, I don't know. I think that's a viable approach.
There's definitely some big name, like StarCraft 2 being an example, right? Nathanius, he's like one of the go-to casters nowadays, right? He started off doing exactly that, just being the B, C stream for some of the events and, you know, ended up basically, you know, being a main caster now. So... it's a great opportunity for other people, you know, that want to get into the community and just, you know, just be part of this whole casting scene, as well as it helps, I think, event organizers in a big way. And overall, just like you said, we had more flexibility to do cooler formats. But yeah, hopefully, I think it's too late to change anything this year for BlizzCon.
Yeah,
right.
So we're going to be seeing the same thing, obviously, in the next week, month, you know, leading up to the grand finals, but 2016, hopefully we can try out some new things. All right, well, let's see, we didn't talk about the meta being stale, but I think that's kind of like that's discussed like every single week, so we won't talk about it unless there's something you can add, Savitz, that's like something with the, you know, highest tier. Is there anything that we can do or I
just think that the best, because it needs to be somehow like refreshed, because I don't think TGT did that. The meta cycle is completely stuck. There's not that many new cards. I think that the viewer experience is not as good as it could be. So I think that if you're a tournament organizer, you should be looking at other formats than Conquest. But like we talked about earlier, just like keep it in mind not to make it too complex. But yeah, so that's pretty much that. I think we need more formats.
Okay. Well, let's move on to Tavern Brawl. So we never talk about Tavern Brawl on Valuetown. So let's kick things off by just the general question. Do you guys like Tavern Brawl as a, you know, just a different play mode right now? Noxious, start with you.
It's kind of weird because I feel like the initial, like the idea was good. They did say that they were working on a tournament, like in-game tournament system, and then they decided to switch to Tavern Brawl instead or something, or they prioritized it over tournament system. I still would rather have had tournament lobbies, but with the advent of Tavern Brawl, they tried out all sorts of rule sets, but I think they just had no one really test them at all. Like, I don't mind rule switches. In fact, I love them. It feels like it was just thrown out there. Like, somebody comes up with an idea, let's give everybody bananas, and who gives a, like, you know, who gives a crap where that goes, right? So, you know, Zoo takes it, you know, Temple Mage takes it, it's a spell, what do you think is going to happen? So it's been kind of hit or miss for the most part, but I feel like the one we have, that we had with the, you know, your life total had to be 3 or 4 behind your opponent if you wanted to get a free minion, or the Boombot versus Annoyotron, or the one that we've got this week. They have been made, if I'm not mistaken, by the same guy, which is a guy they hired recently, or rehired from the WoW dev team, Pat Nagel, believe it or not. And he's basically in charge of... Yeah, that's where Nat Bagel comes from.
Oh, like, okay, I didn't even realize that. Wow, okay.
And he's, from what I gather, if he's the one behind those, then things are just going to get better. And I'm pretty happy, because I think it's a nice break from the typical grind.
Raynad, what do you think? Tavern Brawl.
Tavern Brawl's cool. I mean, I think it's good for the game, and it lets them do a lot of exciting stuff that we wouldn't see otherwise. It's like, for me personally, It's not very competitive, so I don't play it for the same reason I don't play Arena. It's not really like a ladder type thing. Mm-hmm. Some of them I do enjoy a lot. I like the really high skill cap ones. Like I like the banana one a lot. It's really cool to...
So you,
like that one, it was actually really hard to play mechanically, which made it really fun for me.
Yeah.
That's... I think that Terran Brawl is a good thing for the game, even though I don't play it too much. I play maybe like, you know, once per brawl, if that. I never even played the 3-life one. I never... Probably not going to play the one this week, but we'll see.
Sweets?
Yeah, I think Tavern Brawl is really cool. I play maybe like half an hour a week, if it's or an hour a week when it comes out, if it's interesting. I like the pre-made decks more than the ones where you build, because I just don't feel like it's worth it to, because there's nothing... Once you figure out an awesome deck list, I feel like there's nothing at the end of the line. There's no special reward or anything, so... So I'm not interested enough to start, like, for example, this week's Brawl, I actually think it's really cool, but I'm not interested enough to, like, spend hours to try to figure out a good deck list.
Yeah, so, there's not a tournament for you to go to, right? Like, you build a deck list that's amazing. Like, the Banana Brawl, there was one event I remember Ghost of Gamers ran, and, like, there was this crazy Shaman deck that I came up with, and somebody ran it to first place or something, and it was super fun.
Nice.
But, like, you have this tournament system with crazy rule sets, and unfortunately, after the 4 days are gone, that's it. Like, everything, every minute you've spent deck building or brainstorming is for naught, basically. So until the Tavern Brawl comes back in rotation, which it might not, you kind of go nowhere. And I feel like that lack of permanence, to an extent, kind of makes the whole experience a little less compelling if you're into deck building. So pre-made decks, as a result, are just easier to go into.
I think Tavern Brawl was made to be more casual mode. Then you know, like, think of it as the casual mode for, instead of, you know, arena has a cost to it, right? You have to actually pay gold to enter into the arena, and this was just kind of like a free casual mode type of thing. But I agree. I mean, I actually think there are very interesting elements to it that could be for the hardcore gamers right now, and unfortunately there's not. So I don't know if there needs to be a separate Tavern Brawl, you know what I mean? That's more for competitive. But if it is a Tavern Brawl that involves you building your own deck, then we're in the same boat to that whole free to play, like, or, you know, just that whole discussion, right? Like, people that have more cards are gonna have more advantage over the next guy, and that sort of thing. That's kind of where the pre built decks are nice, because we're all in the same boat, right? We're just kind of playing each other.
Yeah, some people, like, different people like different things, and for some people it might be interesting, and the deck building is exactly where the fun is at. But I just, like, for me, the deck building to be fun, like, it's just a personal thing. There should be something at the end of the line, something that you get maybe special reward or something.
Maybe if you win, like, 20 or 40 or, you know, so yeah, something like that I think would be kind of cool if they would make a goal, you know, just some kind of win goal right now, right?
Just you get to open with the golden card in it, then you get 20 wins or something, I don't know.
Yeah, I think that'd be cool.
Achievements. That's the next system they have to put in the game, basically. Like, we're just waiting on that, where you just have to, you know, kill a young priestess with a mad bomber on turn 5, and then you get some random achievement. It's going to be like... They're going to push it one day.
Yeah, definitely. All right, guys. Well, let's take a really quick break. Before we go to a quick break, it's going to be a really quick one, just to grab a drink and that sort of thing, guys. But before we do that, I just want to remind you guys that... if you guys enjoy the show and want to support the show, that there is a Patreon available, patreon.com/valuetown. Best way to, again, support myself and the show and keep this show going and as good as it can possibly be. You can, again, you can take a look at all the rewards and cool milestones and things over there. But hang tight. We'll be right back. All right, guys. Welcome back. And we're going to be going into some card talk now. We're going to be doing our gimmick gold, good or golden segment here, where those of you who've been watching the last few weeks, we go through each card, and I have the three guys classify the cards as gimmick, gold, or golden. Gimmick being maybe a faddish card or just a bad card. Good being okay, but just not OP or not too bad, something in between. Maybe will be good in the future. And then golden, something that's just great right now, and we'll probably be in the meta for a long time. So let's start off with a mage card. So Caldera Drake, it's a 6-mana, 6/6 dragon that has the text, you can only use your hero power you can use your hero power any number of times. Reynad, why don't you start off?
Caldera Drake is a really interesting card. I haven't it's like the one card that I think has some potential that I haven't actually gotten to play with much yet. Since there isn't really a deck for it yet, I'm guessing it's not great, but it's something I want to test out. Definitely lets you do cool things because it's a dragon, lets you build your deck in a lot of interesting ways, and it's kind of a threat even if you don't play like Maiden of the Lake type stuff with it. It's, you know, if it just lives, you have a pretty interesting turn available. So yeah, I mean, I think it's playable, but it's going to take probably more sets for it to be good. I don't know. I'm on the fence about this. You always pick really hard cards.
Okay. Savitz?
Yeah, I think the card is kind of cool, but the synergies are just not there. And I don't think it's strong enough that even with some new cards, with Inspire in particular, get introduced. Like right now, most of the Inspire cards are, in my opinion, a little bit underwhelming. So if there's some other cool Inspire cards, Cold Earth Drake obviously going up in value because you're gonna get the effects multiple times on the same turn. But I'm gonna go with Gimmick on this one. I just don't see it happening.
Okay, so we got good at Gimmick, and how about you, Noxious?
I'd say like between good and Gimmick, it's a card that I kind of put. Like I don't want to put it on the level of Mysterious Challenger because that'd be completely ridiculous. Because one does something when it comes in play, and the other one has to stick around, but. When that card comes down, Kuldar Drake, if you're able to keep it alive even for one turn, the opponent's kind of in a freak-out panic mode. And as a result, very often, when it comes down uncontested, you're kind of forcing your opponent to make really suboptimal plays to get rid of it, because they might just be very afraid of what comes next. So just based on that alone, I'm pretty sure there'll come a time where, like, there'll be a deck where it fits, and where it's considered kind of a standalone drop that you play and... Like, I don't want to say like Dr. Boom, but you play it and it doesn't do anything right now, but it's going to scare them in about the same way.
I think that's kind of the thing, because I don't think it's that status right now. I don't think it's a card that you need to react to, like, oh my god, this is Cold Arrow Trick. I think it should be, and if there was more things that happen afterwards, but I don't know. I guess time will tell.
What do you guys think of this in a Dragon deck?
That's probably where I'd play it. Right? Yeah. You have good dudes leading up to it.
Yeah.
I think you want to play like a very minimal amount of Inspire stuff. Like, I don't think I would play this with Nexus Champion Serrat or anything like that. I think Maiden of the Lake is the only really good combo. Is there anything else? I can't really think of much.
No, like Justicar and Maiden of the Lake, I suppose, but that is
No, that's right. Yeah, that's right. You could play like the Fallen Hero, I guess. But that's like on turn 7. If you play it on 7, you're only getting, you know, 2 extra hero powers. So you'd have to play it much later where you can get, you know, 10 full mana and you go for, a lot more damage. But I don't know. I just feel like the way Inspire panned out makes this card worse than it should be.
Yeah. All right, so somewhere between Gimmick and Goal, good for this one. All right, next up we got a Shaman card. It's 2 mana drop, Ancestral Knowledge. Text is draw 2 card, overload 2. So one issue with Shaman has always been just the ability to draw cards, right? Manatide Totem's always been defenseless for the most, or I mean, it doesn't have any attack, right? So usually it's kind of hard to draw more than one card a lot of times. So this is, you know, another ability for Shaman to be able to draw cards. Savitz, what do you think?
Well, I played with this actually a lot. It's one of the card that I've spent the most out of the ones that we're discussing today, because I've been playing a lot of the combo Shaman with like Malugos and that type of stuff. And I think the card is really cool, and that's definitely something the Shaman needed, but the overload for 2, I think that's just too taxing, because basically you are adding one card to your hand, and I found that you don't want to play this on turn 2 ever. You don't want to play it on turn 3. It's very like weird. You want to wait a long time, and I wish the overload was just one, and even then like the card wouldn't be an auto include. So I'm being a little bit disappointed by it, but the mechanic of drawing cards as Shaman is a very important one. But if this card was stronger, maybe Shaman would be in better shape than it is right now at the bottom. I'm gonna go with Gimmick on this one.
Gimmick. Okay.
I wish it was a tiny bit better. Then it would be good. If it was even a tiny bit, if it was lower than 1, I would say good for sure.
Okay. Noxious.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like in Magic, the Gathering, you know, card draw is priced properly, and in Hearthstone, it's pretty cheap. Compared to that, and I feel like this is the one card in Hearthstone that really demands that you pay a lot. or at least more than, you know, other Hearthstone cards ask of you. So in that regard, I feel like it's balanced. But the problem is, when I play, you know, the same Malygos deck that Savitch plays, or something along those lines, and you play stuff like Elemental Destruction, it's kind of like a turn 7 play. Like, you go Elemental Destruction, and you play Ancestral Knowledge, and you slap in a Lava Shock to make sure that your turn 8 is not too clunky. So I think this card will be good once we have a reason to have Overload. You know, like Unbound Elemental is not good enough. Lava Shock is kind of a gimmick to pull off. If we ever get like a zero-cost spell that deals, or even one cost that deals damage equal to your Overloaded Crystals, I'd be like, yeah, okay. Cool. Yeah. You could pull off like a crazy... You have a good reason to want to overload yourself. And at that point, if that's ever a good archetype, it might be too good, where then suddenly... having Overload is so valuable that cards like Ancestral Knowledge break the deck by giving you stuff like Lava Burst and Lightning Bolt. But I don't know. I feel right now it's just not working out at all from what I've seen. I don't like it too much. I'd say good, but tentatively it's kind of there.
Between good and gimmick, yeah. Then. All right. Ray?
I think like long term this card will be good, because I don't think there's a single spell in Hearthstone that draws cards that like doesn't see play. It's one of those effects that's like charge, where at some point it becomes really good and important. So something like Battle Rage, for example, if you asked before Blackrock, you know, everyone would call that card a gimmick, and now it's like the best card in the right. best deck, or second best behind Deathbite or whatever. So I think like an effect like this, the biggest problem with Ancestral Knowledge is not even the overload. It's the fact that you draw shaman cards, which suck. So I think that might change in the future, and when that does, this becomes a lot stronger.
No, that's actually a great point, because there's nothing you want to draw into really right now. It's not like that combo deck, right? Imagine it's like that one deck.
Imagine this card in Warrior. It'd be pretty good.
Yeah. Pretty good. Oh, my God.
And shield slams.
I'd probably quit the game. Oh, goodness. That's really scary.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Yeah, right now, I'm only seeing it in combo decks, whether it's Malygos or... I've even seen Reincarnate kind of combo decks using this, too. But that idea with the whole spells doing damage at the same as Overload, that's kind of interesting, Noxious. That'd be cool if they did something like that. Okay, next card. We've got, all right, the two legendaries, but we're going to start with this one. It's Fajola Lightbane, 3 mana drop, 3/4 body. Text is, whenever you target this minion, it gains Divine Shield. Noxious, you want to start us off?
Sure. I mean, she's kind of okay. It's just that when you have you know, the option between her and her twin sister, I guess, it's kind of hard to justify taking the Divine Shield one, just because right now there's a lot of pings lying around, and, you know, classes don't really have that much of a problem dealing with it. And the fact that you have to invest into targeting it in the first place makes it a little clunky. How many classes realistically have that? You have Priest with Vun's Chosen, Powered Shield, Druid, who might be trying to play some kind of weird aggro variant, like Marks of the Wild, which is, yeah, we've seen some of that, but usually the counterpart is usually better at that. So the Divine Shield just doesn't seem to me like something I'd care for too much. And it's funny, because when I saw it, I was like, a 3-mana 3/4 with an added effect, that's got to be good somewhere, and it doesn't seem to work even in Paladin. So,
all right, Ray?
I think it's one of those cards that scales as more cards get released pretty well, because right now it's like a very limited amount of targeting effect. But, you know, if there's one Vellon's Chosen getting added to the game every set, or maybe there's another card that generates spare parts that doesn't suck, then all of a sudden it becomes a lot stronger, because it's such a... What was right. that?
Yeah, I don't know. Somebody's mic went crazy there for a second.
Yeah.
Okay, it's better now.
All right. Yeah, so... What was I going to say? Yeah, it's one of the cards that scales. There's only 30-card decks in Hearthstone, so as soon as there's one Clockwork Gnome type of thing that's, you know, good enough to see play on its own, like, let's say, like, a 2-mana 2/3 Clockwork Gnome or something. Like, that's a reasonable card that you could justify putting in some decks. Mm-hmm. So, I think... as more of those things get released, this card gets a lot better, and I think like both sisters will see play. But the other one's probably always going to be better, so I don't think Lightbane will see play unless like the other one is already in the deck.
Okay, Savitz?
I think again, like, I'm kind of on the same line with the other guys about this. The Aedis Darkbane is the better one of the two, but Fjola is the weaker one. I think both of these are excellent in priest, but the thing is that Dark Cultist is already so good and that you can't really run both, so yeah. that's the problem, really, when it comes to priest. And the other buff classes being druid and paladin, they're not worth running in those two just yet. If more buffs get released to those particular classes, or something like Reynald mentioned, the spare part things, I think that these cards will be playable at some point. If there's some cheap, easy buffs, there's something that really combos well with them. Some kind of buff cards that are worth running even without the synergy. Like, that's the big thing, because you can't really add extra buffs just to like complement these guys. I've tried it in Paladin, adding things like Blessing of Wisdom to try combo it a little bit, but it just didn't seem worth it. Like, those cards are not strong enough. So if Druid or Paladin gets more buffs that work well even without this, then you might be just like, sure, throw those in. They're pretty solid.
Yeah. One last note, if we're going to close the topic, like, I've tried this card out as a curve play, like with Blood Knight, where you just like play her on, you know, 3, and then on 4 you go Blessing of Might or Blessing of Wisdom, and then you go into Blood Knight, so you get a 3-mana 6/6 out of your own Divine Shield, which you got out of a buff. So in that case, it's kind of interesting, where it's basically giving, it's really just, you know, when this gets targeted, give +3/+3 to that one guy in your deck. But it's just, even with those plays, it's still, at best, kind of a gimmick in that stage. I don't know.
Yeah, you guys brought up Idis too, so Idis obviously being the counterpart for this, which is same body, same mana, but the difference is no Divine Shield, but 3 damage to a random minion. Same issues, I mean, we obviously discussed just triggers not being there for Idis too. So probably gimmick right now, possibly good later, I guess is the consensus here.
Yeah, right now gimmick for sure.
Okay. All right, let's move on to a Warlock card. It's 2-mana drop, 4/3 body, demon. Well, whenever it's called Wrathguard, whenever this minion takes damage, also deal the amount of damage to your hero. So yeah, I've been a little surprised that we didn't see this. I thought this card would actually be played a lot more, just given that it's, you know, nice stats and health doesn't really matter to Warlocks. But Ray, what do you think?
The 2-drop slot is just so competitive. Like, it's not the reason cards see play in Hearthstone isn't because they're like good. It's because they're the best option out of all of the options. So for 2-drops, there actually happens to be a lot of options, including cards that are in no way balanced at all, like Haunted Creeper and Knife Juggler. So like, those cards are on Emperor Thoris and Levels of Broken. So people don't like recognize, like, they see more play in more decks than Emperor. Like, they're not okay. And Wrathguard doesn't compete with that. Like, Wrathguard's a good card, but not like, you can't make a 2-drop that you would play over Juggler, Creeper, and in Warlock, Nerubian Egg, also better than this. Because those cards are just so hard to interact with. So even though Wrathguard is a good card, it's just like, for a 2-mana card to see play, it has to be so, like, so good that it would be problematic. Like, it would have to be a 2-mana 4/4 or something.
Right.
Disgusting.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But you can still play it. Like, I have played it in really aggressive zoo lists where maybe I like didn't want Creeper, and then I just because it deals a lot of face damage. That's like the advantage of this card. But in almost always, it's going to be worse than Creeper.
Savitz?
Yeah, I'm kind of along the same lines as Reynard about that one. I think it's definitely a good card, but it's hard just about playing. You cannot play it over Juggler. You would never do that. Definitely, obviously, a zoo card, but it's a Warlock card. But Creeper, or sometimes when I'm playing against the zoo, I feel like when the Creeper hits the board on turn 2, I'm like, yes, because it only has one attack and it's kind of low on threat. So Wrathguard is a much bigger threat if you can't answer it, and it can deal a lot of damage. The card, if it was slightly tweaked stats, let's say 3/4 instead of 4/3, it would be completely broken. Like, it would die to a Frostbolt. So I think that the stats are at the absolute maximum, and it's a good card, but the Creeper, it's so sticky still. I think that most of the times you want the Creeper anyway, but it's definitely very close to playable. So, good card.
Okay, Noxious?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, this card is exactly like Reynard mentioned, pretty much what I wanted to bring up, which is it just shows how insane 2-drops are in Hearthstone. And like, Knife Juggler being one of the cards that I have the biggest gripe with as far as its design, because it's got like a lot of the sticking points about it really kind of irk me. Like, the fact that it's a 3/2, so it's got a decent stat line, it's aggressive, it's got RNG built in. Just like all the things about Juggler that make it good, because of that, You can't play a card like Wrathguard. I mean, I've tried playing the card, you know, in aggressive decks that aim to just punch face. But the issue you have with it is that it just gets stopped by a random 2-mana 3/2. You take 3 damage from it, which is fine. But, you know, very often if you're not able to answer their smaller 2 drops, your 4/3 will still die to it. And you'll only have gained like 2 extra damage out of it at most. And for the most part, that's not playing into your long game. So it doesn't seem to fit anywhere. I wonder if when we get like a demon archetype, you know, something that makes demons work. Because like when I saw Demon Fuse, as much as I laughed at it because it's kind of ridiculous, when you stack that with Power of Whelming, and you know, that's a lot of burst damage you can muster just from buffs. If there's ever a way to go full face with kind of a demon oriented deck, I could see that fit in the future. But right now, it's mostly a gimmick.
Yeah. Okay.
And so it's a weird card. Creeper is better, but there's more to it. If I knew that I would every time get to play this on turn 2, I would probably play it, because I think it would be good enough. But it's a really bad top deck when you get it on later on. Like getting the damage to your face, it's at that point it's going to be meaningful, and it usually can be dealt easily. While Creeper might have some added value if, like, maybe Defender of Arcus, the Spiders or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, so overall, I think a little bit more towards the good than gimmick on this one. And yep. Hopefully in the future we'll see some of this. Next up we've got Bolf. Bolf Ramshield, legendary 6-mana, 3/9 body. Whenever your hero takes damage, this minion takes it instead. So this is the first card that actually has this type of text, which it's kind of cool, right? Definitely different, which I'm always in favor of having different types of cards. Savitz, what do you think?
I tried so hard to make it work.
Of course,
I really
right?
tried. Really? I actually got a donation to craft a golden one. I crafted a golden one, and I tried, but it doesn't seem to quite get the job done. It's so weird. Like, it's taking aggro phase, and then it's like taking damage, and that's not quite good enough. The mana cost is also too high. It feels so much better to play something like a heal pot, which just like kind of negates the same amount of damage, but it just works like way better. I don't know, like it's just a little bit underwhelming, but I'm happy that Blizzard kind of introduced this kind of type of card, because it is something that we haven't had before, so mm-hmm. it's kind of pushing the limits, but in that sense, like design wise so I think it's a really cool card, but definitely gimmick, and you don't want to use your dust on it.
Noxious?
This is the card that I was actually the most, like, one of the cards that I was most excited to just mess around with. Yeah. Because, you know, I asked, the first question that I asked the devs was, you know, does this work with Faceless? And they said, yes, you know, only one of them will take damage. So I'm like, yeah, you know, if I get a lot of them on the board, I can have some fun. And I'll, like, I have 27 health shield, but at that point, I might as well run, you know, a typical control warrior. So what am I doing with both in my life? And I wish this guy had a higher health total, so you could at least, like, mitigate either more damage, because right now you can consider this guy as being like a 0/9,
yeah,
effectively, mm-hmm. like it never retaliates, mm-hmm. Unless you're protecting it. But if you're protecting it, then do you really need the extra health from the Bolf? Yeah, kind of, not really, not so much. So it's trying to do something that it can't even do properly. But I think one day, if there's ever a way to get a similar card for cheaper with a relatively high amount of I'm out of health, it could be kind of fun to try something out.
Yeah, Ray?
I think it's definitely gimmick, right? Like, it's bad. Yeah. You're paying 6 mana mm-hmm. for, like, a double shield bearer. It's not worth it. But it's cool from, like, a balancing standpoint, what they thought about this ability. Because it's a 6-mana 3/9, so if you compare that to Boulder Fist, it's, like, 5-7 worth of stats. So it's, like, worse than Boulder Fist. So they actually took stats off of this card for the ability, which means that they saw the ability as a net positive. Whereas I think having this ability on an expensive minion almost always is like a drawback, right? Like, yeah, it should be like a 6/8 at least, like better than Boulder Fist, because this is like, if it didn't have text, it would be better. So
yeah.
That's like the scary thing, is that it's actually, it looks like a good ability, like a defensive ability, but it's actually a drawback on a minion. So they could balance it in a really interesting way where it's like better than Boulder Fist. So you're actually like gaining stats in exchange for having this ability. And then you try to turn this drawback into a net positive somehow by playing in a defensive deck or something. And like, that's how you end up with an interesting card, where I think they just evaluated this ability as being like helpful on the minion, whereas it's actually a drawback, and the stats don't reflect that, and that's why it's so upsetting.
Yeah, I thought initially, you know, it, like a card that was like a format 2/7, say like a format 2/7 that's not a legendary with the same ability would be pretty cool, because you'd get it, you know, early enough to counter some of the early game, and you also mitigate phase damage. But at turn 6, those minions that die to, you know, 2 or 3 attack are kind of gone. So it really does very little.
Yeah. I think the only thing that I've ever had, the only deck that I've made that's even had any remote success with this is the Confused deck.
Oh my god.
Just some kind of Confused. I think that day one I made, like, you know, Medics and Bulbs and Death Lords and all that stuff. Oh my god. That's about the only thing I've ever done. Which, you know, keeps you alive against aggro, but that's about all it does. Alright, so gimmick for this one. Gimmick for this one. Alright, next up we've got, alright, a Hunter card. Ram Wrangler, 5 mana drop, 3/3 body, battle cry, if you have a beast, summon a random beast. Uh-oh, looks like we lost Noxious for a second. Let's see, whose turn is it? Ray, I think it's your turn.
Yeah, so this is a card that, unfortunately, the first time I played it, I did it on stream, and my opponents were, like, running Lotheb into my web spinner and stuff.
Right.
When they were playing aggressive decks, just to stop this from working. So I feel like I didn't get the best testing with it. Because people know you have it, it's so much worse. It's like infinitely worse. But yeah, after playing with it a decent amount, like, it's better than I initially thought it was. But I still wouldn't play it over something like Sludge Belcher. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm not in love with it. Maybe if there's just a few more beasts and you're not relying on as many cards from, you know, old sets that are just kind of outdated, then this could be really good. But you'd have to have like a really heavy beast deck. I think, like, if there was like another Haunted Creeper type thing, I would not be unhappy playing this. It seems fine.
What do you get? What do you think for the most part? Do you think you get better value or worse value generally from the random drop here?
Well, I always get worse, but most people.
Of course you do. Of course you do. Savitz.
So, when I first saw the card, I actually thought it's like amazing, and I got really scared. And now I'd be so happy that it's not getting played in competitive, because I think this is a very good example of a card that's not healthy for competitive play at all.
Yeah.
I was so worried that so many games would be just get decided by what gets rolled out of it. If you get a King Cross, or if you get a the Hungry Crab, the difference is so huge. So it has been a little bit like underwhelming the times where I've seen it. And Hunter doesn't like conditional cards. They want to curve out nicely. They want to go face this card. Okay, makes it a bit clunky. You have to add some extra beasts. You have to play Web Spinner, which you might otherwise not want to play. So you need to add kind of like bad cards to potentially like suboptimal cards to make it work. So I think there's enough. I'm happy to say that I think there's enough drawbacks from the condition of having beasts that this is not a good card. But I wouldn't be too surprised if it's actually like a little bit of a sleeper, and there's enough good beasts that you can, like sticky beasts, if more of those get introduced, that it would be a really, really good card.
Mm-hmm. Noxious?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, the drawback point is really good. I mean, when I saw the card, I was really afraid of what it could do. And, like, obviously it's got that whole variance effect to it that I don't like it for competitive play. Like, I was casting a tournament where I think Oskaka lost 2 matches or 2 games to his opponent because, you know, one time it was a King Crush, the other time it was, what is it, like, High Main or something. Anyway, like, back-to-back, just completely crazy outcomes. And you're like, yeah, okay, that was fun to watch, but from a competitive standpoint, I was really worried that this would make it into the, like, the core Hunter list. And then eventually, when you run the stats on it, like, your average is basically like a worse Silverhand Knight. Like, sure, you're getting a beast, but there's a prerequisite to get, like, a Silverhand Knight. And I'm not going to pay 5 mana for a 4/4 and a 2/2, so I'm not going to play 5 mana for a 3/3 and like a 3/4 on average from Ram Wrangler. I just hope that there is no point where, you know, like in the old days, people start running Snapjaw to enable Houndmaster and Midrange Hunter. I hope we never get that 4-drop beast that is good enough to just enable the Ram Wrangler.
Yes.
That's what I don't want to see ever. Because as much as I want it, like, because it's fun, I also just despise that kind of crazy swing.
Yeah, like a sticky 4-mana beast, if that was to ever to happen, like a playable, sticky, playable, hard-to-remove 4-mana beast, I think the Ram Blanker might become a staple.
Yeah. It's going to happen one day. You know there's going to be a 4-mana beast. Yeah, you're coming up. I mean, they've been focusing so hard on 4-mana, I feel like, in all the other classes, that it should be on its way, I think.
Piloted Kangaroo.
Oh, man.
Piloted Kangaroo.
Always drops a... What comes out of it? Like the Savage Combat?
Joey.
Joey.
A little kangaroo out of the pouch.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
Sure. That sounds cool.
Nothing like the acid maul you get. I mean, you guys are talking about the good outcome. So how about when the hunter actually gets an acid maul and it clears his entire board? That's definitely crazy situations. All right, so I think that's going to be it. So this card obviously is more gimmicky and hopefully not golden in the future, as the Noxious put it. Why don't we go into deck talk here? And we've got 3 decks here, a couple from Hearthpwn, and then Raynad actually has a deck to discuss. We'll talk about a couple from Hearthpwn first. First one being Aggro-Druid. These are all decks that, or at least the Hearthpwn ones, are ones that people have gotten into at least top 50 legend with, so I figured it'd be worth taking a look at. This is more the kind of aggro token variety that I think people have, you know, at least talked about, or you know, maybe even tried on the past, but we've never talked about it on this show. So I figured let's just talk about some of the details here. Savitz, what do you think of this deck?
Wow, I mean, I can't believe it works. I haven't seen a lot of people have success with Aggro Druid.
Yeah,
it's a lot of questionable cards, namely the Dark Whispers.
Mm-hmm.
It looks quite interesting. I haven't tried anything quite like this. Double Nourish.
Is pretty interesting, too.
Yeah, I have really a hard time evaluating this. Seems like it might be a little bit clunky. You gotta draw, like, you gotta curve out nicely with it. But if you get well, this kind of applies to every deck, I guess. If you curve out nicely, then you're gonna do well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the decklist is cool, but I don't think it actually works.
Noxious?
So I'm a little surprised by the decklist, and at first I was going to say, you know, I'm surprised he didn't just go for the, you know, the typical aggro, not that it's very typical, but typical aggro druid with Druid of the Panther and, you know, people putting in Mark of the Wild and really curving low. Instead of what he did is he's got like 1,000 options. Like, you know, he's got the Dark Whispers, which is, it looks ridiculous, but, you know, Power of the Wild gives it a little bit more versatility. Juggler works with Living Roots. It's got that, you know, there's multiple plays you can make with the cards you have with this deck, and that's kind of what I like about it. You know, Echoing Ooze looks ridiculous, but then there's Power of the Wild, there's Knife Juggler, there's Savage Roar, Defend of Argus, and mm-hmm. then there's Vowed Teacher with the usual Innervate Power of the Wild.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the fact that it's running a lot of unorthodox stuff as a top end is, you know, when you put that aside, it always has a play, and it's always a little out, like you have to search for it. I don't think they come in necessarily as obvious ones. And I like that. Mm-hmm. I'll have to try that one out.
Yeah, it seems more of a flooding druid actually than the
kind of
druid.
Yeah,
yeah. Right. Ray, what do you think?
It seems like a good deck aside from the Whispers, Nourish, and Ixia part, but those might work really well. They do interesting things. I would have to play with it to really know. My first inclination would be to like play something like Ancient Allure, you know, over Nourish, and
right.
Replace Dark Whispers with some other stuff too, maybe Azurdrake, I don't know. But I mean, it's definitely not a bad looking deck. I would, yeah, it's tough to evaluate. It's one of those things you have to play with. It's cool though. I think the other Aggro Druid deck is really good, really strong.
Okay.
I saw Wreckful playing it on stream, I think, and mm-hmm. he was like rank 5 on the first day or something, just spamming it. And I was watching his games, and he's just like winning turn 5 every game.
Exactly.
Thinking about it, and I was like, this seems really hard to interact with for most decks, like the way it curves out. So I showed up to like Esports Arena where they had that tournament.
Yeah.
And I asked Hyped, I was like, hey, do you have the deck list for that Aggro Druid everyone's playing? And he's like, what Aggro Druid? And, because it's not Wreckful playing Mirrors. Apparently it was from some website or something. I don't know.
He played
but
what?
Yeah, eventually it showed up on Reddit like a week later, and now everyone's playing it. But the deck seems good.
Yeah, it's refreshing to see Aggro Druid, actually. Like, I'm so tired of seeing the same Druid over and over again.
Like, it might be better. That's what's scary. Like, it might be better than normal Druid.
Well, there was a time when Aggro Druid was, you know, at least played more, right, than mid-range druid, at least for a short period in the metagame. I don't even, like a year or two, year and a half ago or something. So
Yeah, all right. I think it was back when they were trying to refine mid-range. Like, people had their own spin on it, which was more tokens.
Yeah, it was like people were starting to get used to the combo being, like, incredibly powerful all the time, even in mid-range druid. All right, so let's see. We got a priest deck here, too. Sounds boring because it's dragon, but there's a couple inner fires and divine spirits added to this. And I've actually played against this, like, several times on the ladder, and it's always surprised me because I never expect the ending to be what it is. What do you guys think of this type of variant on Dragon Priest? Noxious? It's right up your alley, man.
It's kind of funny because, you know, I was playing Crusher Priest. I don't know if any of you have actually played the deck, but it was like, before TGT, it was like Stormwind Knights, and you'd run like one Stormwind Knight, one Gnomeregan Infantry with a typical Priest deck that aims to cycle. And it's basically a combo deck that aims to just take you by surprise and finish you off. This is taking everything that's good about Priest right now, which is Dragon, basically, and they're going and adding that extra bit of combo. When you're looking at cards like Deathlord and, you know, Dragonkin Sorcerer, Twilight Guardian, all having a lot more health than attack, I think it's actually really fitting. I'm not sure about, you know, two of each other. I'm not sure if that's necessary, because it might be super clunky sometimes, but I like the idea of putting at least one single copy in.
Ray?
I was playing a lot of Inner Fire Priest before TGT, and I kind of liked the deck a lot. I tried some really low curve lists with nothing more than 4 mana and some other stuff. But, yeah, I mean, dragons are good. The Inner Fire package is better than people give it credit for. Mm-hmm. So I could definitely see this working. The one thing about Inner Fire is a lot of times you want to, like, use the combo on Deathlord to, like, hit them really low. But then, you know, they deal with your big guy, obviously, and then you don't have the burst damage to finish. So it's tough that this deck doesn't have burst. Like, it's going to be hard to find a good time to inner fire. You kind of have to only do it once they're already at, like, 16 or lower. And then, if that's the case, you probably already won the game because it meant you had to have board control. And if you have board control with Priest, you've already won. So I guess, like, what I'm saying is without burst, it's hard for the inner fire to be as good as it as you think it is, because making a 16-16 is surprisingly irrelevant a lot of the time when the rest of your deck can't deal damage.
Yeah. I don't know, maybe incorporating Confuse instead of Inner Fire, right. Just so you can have multiple minions, right? Swap might be
all about that Confuse.
Yeah, hell yeah, man.
I actually like that a lot. It makes sense. Like, Confuse seems to me like you could literally sub out Divine Spirits and, like, Inner Fire for Confuse, and you might be able to have, like, a pseudo Bloodlust. But
yeah. Yeah, definitely something like that. I think the Valen Chosen is actually really nice in this too, because you can kind of you can fight some mid range decks a little bit, even just, you know, throwing a Valen Chosen on a Deathlord, right, and not focusing completely on the combo. Kind of cool. So Vitz, what do you think?
I was playing this yesterday, actually.
Oh yeah, cool.
Yeah, and a little bit today as well. I heard that this was like a rank one legend list from Chinese server.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I gotta be honest, I didn't have any success with it. It seemed very clunky, and closing out games seemed very difficult. I was falling behind a lot on the early game, and even when I was ahead, it was still sometimes like really hard to close out games. It seemed really clunky. I feel like I was doing something wrong, but the Inner Fire and Divine Spirits, they were not really like pulling it through. I guess something like Secret Paladin, for example, it was impossible to ever like fully clear the board, even with the light bomb. So it didn't work out. I don't know. It was like, I was surprised how it looked so cool, but it actually seemed really bad when I was playing it.
Yeah, I think it's one of those decks that it probably takes a lot of games to figure out exactly how to play every single matchup. But regardless, definitely fun. You guys should try it out. Like, the viewers are checking it out. I've played maybe one or two games with it, and it was kind of cool. All right, next up we've got a deck from Raynad here. I need to add it real quick because he just gave it to me. I'm excited. I don't even know what it is, so this should be...
It's got two cards that I love that I haven't seen remotely enough people play, so I'm pretty happy.
Arcane Blast and what?
Yeah, it's Arcane Blast and just
beautiful golden deck. Oh, yes, the Maligus. All right, here we go. So, Ray, why don't you take us through this?
I needed a ladder. Oh, wrong one. That's Noxious's. Right? It's way more interesting than mine.
Oh, actually, than me. We can talk about Noxious's, too, in a second.
Yeah, afterwards.
Well, actually, why don't I have it up, Noxious. Why don't you talk about this one?
Oh, sure. It's not refined. It's actually, like, a very rough draft of something I'm trying out. Like, obviously, I don't play at high levels. Like, I don't really aim too much to climb the ladder. So it's mostly for fun. The idea was just getting a Malygos deck with Aviana and a Faceless, like the typical combo. But it's kind of in a normal Druid shell. I'm just trying to figure out how to make the deck draw. And until I figure that out, I don't know if it'll really work out. Like, it's obviously trying to get Malygos plus Aviana plus Faceless on the board for Moonfire. But you can just win normally like a Druid would, except you don't get to cheat with combo. So it ends up being like a grinding war until you get the stabilized late game. So I don't know. It's a work in progress. I just feel like finding a Druid Drakes or a Nourish maybe would make sense.
Yeah, Nourishes would be good. You have a lot of 9 drops.
All right, here we go. So Rain has a mage here. Let's take a look at. Okay, so tempo mage, is that right?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I started climbing. I decided to play Hearthstone for a day for some reason, like a few days ago.
it was probably like
October 3rd or something, and then so it was like really early in the season, and I was ranked 16, and I decided, I'll try tempo mage. So I put like mirror images in and the normal stuff, and I eventually started tuning it more and more because it kept winning, and eventually, you know, made a bunch of changes. Put in Rag Boom. They weren't there originally. It was more of an aggro list. I had 2 Arcane Blast, 2 Mirror Image, and 2 Arcane Missile Blast and Mirror Image. So I had all the 1 mana spells. And then I realized Mirror Image is really bad against things that aren't Warrior. So at the end of the day, it looks like a Tempo Mage deck, which isn't super exciting to a lot of people. But the cool thing about this deck is it's actually really well refined for the current metagame. Mm-hmm. So this is like a deck I would 100% recommend for ladder. And Mulligan's, while it's really efficient, I think it's within 1 card of perfect. That 1 duplicate was a 2nd Arcane Intellect for the longest time, but I made it duplicate because it's a similar effect when you play it from hand, but it's you don't get those games where you don't get value off a Scientist anymore. So it's just a really refined deck. The interesting thing to me about it was like how good Arcane Blast was compared to Mirror Image. It's hard for a 1 mana spell to have a high impact, but because his deck plays so much removal with 2 Blast, 2 Missile, 2 Flame Cannon, 2 Frostbolt, 2 Fireball, Flame Waker, a lot of times, instead of, you're not like, you don't lose the game when you don't have early game board control, unlike most decks. Like most decks, if you lose the early game board, it snowballs out of control and you're dead. Whereas with this deck, a lot of times you'll just have a hand that's like full of spells, and you can just, it's really easy to find a turn where you go like Flame Waker, Coin Spell, and all of a sudden you're ahead on board, and if you ever get ahead, you stay ahead because you have all this removal. So it just felt really refined to me. It's a really clean, good deck, safe across all matchups. There's no matchup where you're like dead going into it. So I really like it for that reason. I think it's kind of the perfect ladder deck. It's proactive. It's fast. It's good when you're like it can win when you're behind. And yeah, it's just a good deck.
Yeah, sounds good. Savitz, what do you think?
I think that's, like Raynon said, I think for ladder, that's like pretty good. It looks really fast. With those mirror entities, for example, it's, and it's also some apprentices too. There's a lot of those tempo plays. Probably fairly consistent. I mean, obviously, secrets sometimes you draw into your hand. You don't want to draw those into your hand. Yeah, I mean, I'm still a little bit on the edge about the Arcane Blast. Like Raynon said, it's not I have a really difficult time believing that the Arcane Blasts actually work when you only have the Azure Drakes for spell power. It might be good. I'm not saying it's not good, but I have to see it with my own eyes too. Well, okay, Flame Waker synergy is also there, but still, like, I don't know. Like, can you afford
Yazlo?
Like, you might draw those two earlier. It might make your curve bad because it's 2 Arcane Blasts, 2 missiles. That's like, and even 2 Flame Guns. There's so many spells, and I think that with a deck like this, it's really important. Like, curve out nicely, and if there's no targets for those spells, it might hurt their curving ability.
Yeah, you don't keep the removal in the matchups where it's not going to have targets. So like once you figure out mulligans, it pretty rarely happens. But that's the thing I liked about it, is you can have a hand of all spells, you don't have to curve, and it's still good. Because at some point they're going to play stuff, and then you play a dude, you kill their thing, and you flip it. There's very few decks that have comeback mechanisms. But yeah, Blast almost never deals 4 damage. It's always 2, and I still play it. Like, Holy Smite that can't go face is still good enough when your deck plays Mana Worm, Sorcerer's Apprentice, Flame Waker. It's so good to just like Sorcerer's Apprentice, Arcane Blaster, Knife Juggler, or just mostly the Flame Waker thing. Something like Mirror Image, it doesn't control the board, whereas Flame Waker, Coin Blast will kill pretty much anything they could have in the first three turns.
Okay, fair enough.
Go ahead, please.
I can definitely imagine that this is one of those decks that when a new season starts, if you want to climb the ladder fast, I'm sure that this works well.
So you don't competitive wise, you don't think it's
I don't see it in competitive, but for like fast climbing or the ladder, I think it's fine. But for competitive, I have my doubts. Like mirror entity in competitive play is always a bit weird.
Yeah, it's very different for competitive play. The deck is like fine, but it's hard to justify playing it over Druid or Handlock or Challenger Paladin or Patron. There's just too many degenerate things you can be doing instead.
I think we might have seen more Mage in actually the America BlizzCon tournament than the other two regions. Because I kind of vaguely remember seeing like a surprising amount of Mage compared to the big three, like you mentioned. But yeah, definitely a strong deck right now. Noxious, what do you think of this deck?
I just like the fact that it's like substituting some of the early game for Arcane Blast, because that's pretty much the card that has been sleeping, I find, a lot in TGT. It's a card that looks like it should be working in some mage deck, but if you try to build a control mage, you usually don't get to win the way you want. Whereas if you just sprinkle in Arcane Blast in a tempo, it makes a little bit more sense there. But I'm just curious, you know, why, like, I get Rag is, you know, pretty impactful, but have you tried Antonidas and Ronin in those spots, or did they just not fit at all?
I tried Ronin. He was worse than War Golem, as expected.
Yeah, of course.
Garbage every game. And then Antonidas is not in the deck because it's not... Like, the idea behind a tempo deck is you dump your hand early for board control.
Yeah.
By turn 7, you should... Like, there's zero chance that you have something like Arcane Blast or Missiles in hand. You would play them before then. So,
sure.
The expensive cards in the deck, when you're playing them, they're usually the last card in your hand. So something like Rag is probably the best card in the deck, consistently overperforming. I would play like three of them in this if I could. And Boom is solid, not as good as Rag in this deck. Because they can like win the game on their own when you play them with an empty hand. But if you play Antonidas with an empty hand, it just doesn't do anything. So Antonidas, if I played Antonidas, I would have to have Clockwork Gnome.
You have to go mech, basically, yeah. At least a little bit mechish. You'd have to put some spare parts.
Just the spare parts, yeah. So Clockwork Gnome instead of Blast, and then Yeti instead of Shredder. And then at that point, you probably want Emperor Thorsen as well, because then you can do the whole spare part Emperor Antonidas thing. It's not like... I don't think the deck would be that much worse if it did that. It's just another way to go.
I think Ronin is absolutely like garbage. I've tried.
I've tried it many times too.
I've tried it so many times, and always the same thing. I'm like, I wish I had a Rag instead. Rag is so much faster. Then I tried playing both, and okay, turn 8, I have Rag and Ronin. Let me think. Okay, Rag, and then you're like, why do I have a Ronin in my deck?
Yeah.
So you can BGH and get Arcane Missiles right away.
Right.
The one time Ronin was good for me, I was playing Control Warrior, and the other guy played Ronin, and I top decked Faceless, copied it, and then like BGH'd it, and then he was sad.
Oh no, that's really nasty. Poor card. It's like 8 drops need to do something right now, otherwise, like if it had Battlecry put 3 Arcane Missiles in your hand, I'm like, that's broken. But because it's a death rattle, you almost...
It'd be good.
Really, with Archmage as a follow up? I don't know, man. Like, you guarantee to get 1 drops. I play it. Give it a shot at least.
Alright. Okay, that's going to be it. I think that's all that we have for decks. We're going to move on to some Q&A, and for those of you that have posted questions here, I'm going to go ahead and put the link here again. We're going to be reading them out and hopefully answering them. Thanks for all of you that have submitted them so far, and if you guys want to submit them like last minute here, I'll definitely refresh the page and try to check out what else is going on. But first thing, I think Kolo Kalamper Matterhorn asks, how about adding neutral spells to Hearthstone? Which has, I think, been something that a lot of people have suggested in the past. Noxious, you want to take this one?
I think that'd have to be in the form of consumables, you know, like potions or, you know, some kind of consumable items that you take, just lore-wise. Otherwise, making spells would be a little weird, since most classes tend to have their own lore, but... I don't know. It's just it opens this I don't want to say can of worms, really. But it's just that there are neutral cards that might as well be class cards right now, like Molten Giant. Yes and no with Echo Mage, but there's a lot of times in Hearthstone where some neutral cards might as well have been class cards, like Injured Blademaster. And I feel like neutral spells will fall in the same exact category. I don't know about neutral spells as much as I'd like maybe multi-class spells, because I could see some classes using the same tools, but not necessarily have them be available for a warrior, let's say, right? Like a mana potion, as ridiculous as it sounds, for a warrior, I'm not too sure that would be fitting, but maybe you give it to the caster classes. I don't know, I like the idea, at least.
Okay. What about you guys? Any comments on that question?
Yeah, I think that... it's really dangerous, and if they were, there could be neutral spells, but they have to be bad, basically, because some classes get better benefit out of them than others do, and I think that in most cases it would usually be the same classes getting the better use out of the neutral spells, like Rogue with preparations, for example. That's like the first thing in my mind, like, what if there's a neutral spell? Okay, well, Rogue has a prep, so if it's good, then it might be too good for Rogue. And neutral spells on those classes that can't benefit that much out of them would be like as if it wasn't even neutral in the first place. So I think that it's like, okay, I know the potion thing that Noxious mentioned is kind of interesting, and I think it could be maybe done like some kind of heal thing, not for too much, but
yeah,
they would definitely have to be weak. So I don't think it's necessarily a good idea.
I think that neutral spells already exist. There's a lot of them. Big Game Hunter, Anti-Keelbot.
Yeah.
But there's a big reason. Like when people think about Hearthstone, they're like, "Oh, here's this thing they could do. Why haven't they done this?" And the Hearthstone development team is like very good at what they do. They're smart people. Like there are reasons they didn't incorporate neutral spells, and part of it is like what Savit said, where they have to be so bad that they're just kind of uninteresting, and it might as well be a minion, kind of like a 4-mana. Like for there to be a neutral card draw card, it would have to cost 4 mana. So it would be like strictly worse Arcane Intellect. That's not an exciting card, 4-mana draw 2. That's like the power level that all these cards would have to be at. So first of all, they're just not as interesting as minions. Second of all, this I think is the big reason, is that Hearthstone team is kind of like, they always struggle with class identity. They want every class to feel like it has its own identity, and the biggest way they do that is with spells. So it's already gotten to the point where like every class just has like different good cards, but there's not much identity to each class. You know, there's multiple classes that are weapon based. There's multiple classes that have buffs. There's multiple classes that heal very well. It's too much overlap right now. When I'm playing like Paladin or when I'm playing Warrior, it doesn't feel like I'm playing. It just needs to feel more warrior-y. And if every class had access to like a neutral armor thing, then there's more crossover between classes and what they can do. So, but also the balance thing, like yeah, that's a very big part of it too. You know, imagine Hunter's Mark in any other class. It's disgusting.
Patron.
Oh my god.
Yeah,
gosh.
Patron. Imagine in Mage, 2-mana Assassinate, or Druid, or Rogue.
Right.
Or it's just, yeah, any class would be sick. So.
All right, leads to, I think that's a pretty good segue into this next question from Abonet Asmari, who asks, in your opinion, why is Blizzard Hearthstone team so slow to address or even to do anything at all about all the things people have been asking for? Are the people asking for things that are asking for things are a minority, and that is why. Okay, so I guess are the people that are, I guess, complaining a minority, and that's the reason that they're not addressing it. Who wants to take this one?
I'll take it.
Yeah, you kind of addressed
okay,
it anyway.
So you guys wanted to say something?
Not really, I'll pick it up after.
I think, like, okay. It's a really complicated question to answer, actually. First of all, there's just a priority list of stuff that has to happen. There's deadlines that have to be met for expansions coming out. There's a lot of work that goes into that, finding voice actors, artwork, all that. Second of all, most of the time people complain about stuff, it's something that the Blizzard team already thought of and didn't change for very good reasons. This whole anti-patron circle jerk on Reddit, for example, any one of the 1,500 kids upvoting this post complaining about the deck, I would challenge any of them to beat me if they're playing patron and I'm playing like basic cards. I think they would lose most of the time. The deck is like very high skill cap. People just kind of echo chamber about problems. Even things like deck slots, if they add it, it's going to be done as part of a bigger plan in a big way. And it's a lot of times there's engineering reasons that they can't do it. Like maybe it's just not programmed in the game. I don't know. There's just so many reasons. They know what they're doing, though. Like it's one of the best companies of making games for a reason.
Wow, this is like a non-salt answer from Ray. This is awesome. Any of you two, any comments on this?
Well, I just forgot. Go ahead. Sorry, I just was gonna say I forgot the original question. So,
okay, I'm just wanted to like kind of echo that most of the things that get discussed on Reddit, whatever you see there, like some of the issues potentially with the game, like the Blizzard team has already thought about it. There's much more that kind of much more that has to be considered than what somebody like might at first think when you post that thing on Reddit, like when you post that you lost to patrons in one turn and it feels bad, man. Mm-hmm. It's not that simple. That's like the main thing, I guess. And yeah, there's more to the most of the problems than what people think. And
yeah.
And Blizzard employees, they really watch carefully all the feedback. Every single patron thread gets posted, they read that stuff.
You guys have to remember too, they don't want to make a change and then have to revert the change. That's like by far the worst thing you could do as a developer. So yeah, they're very cautious about changes. Noxious, you're going to say something?
I don't know. I'm thinking about the whole ordeal because I feel like some of the problems that we pinpoint, as a community or the people bring up, a lot of the time they're tied into bigger problems or, you know, you could fix a problem by addressing something else entirely. There's 10,000 ways to tackle a problem, and the devs know that. Like, you don't just change a number on a card to necessarily change it. You could change the way, you could change the ladder system, and I'm sure a lot of people would stop complaining about all the stuff they complain about. So, you know, that's one other thing. You have, Tavern Ball was an attempt for them to kind of try to get people to enjoy the game more casually and incentivize them to, like, the people who want to have fun, they don't have any more reason to complain about being beat down by, you know, meta decks. Yet when we look at Tavern Ball, that's not how we see it. We see it as an extra mode that they put in, but really it's addressing a problem that people brought up. So when people bring up, say, Patron as an example, I feel like a lot of it has to do with the viewer experience we have, and we're really majority on Twitch. We're like a very small segment of the population plays on it and watches it. So when we complain about Patron, we're basically just talking to one another. And Blizzard knows that internally. Even Reels, I know, mentioned that Patron was potentially a problem deck when he was streaming after the release of the card. So I don't know. I just feel like it's harder when you're a dev to make the right call when it comes to changing something.
Yeah, I think generally they're taking the approach, and I think Ben mentioned this on his last appearance, is that, you know, they want the players, or they want to see if the players can figure out, right, use the ingenuity to correct meta, which is definitely the right approach. I mean, you don't want to assume that the game's like completely, you know, just figured out all the time and then just making rash decisions like that. So that's kind of what they're doing, you know, with Patron, and definitely mixed feelings. I don't think it's like a majority consensus, like a very, very clear one, even though a lot of people complain, but those are vocal, these are the most vocal people. So we'll see, we'll definitely see.
I want to add one thing to that. Maybe like in the future that when there's some things that just like are have to get changed, for example the Undertaker, that 6 months of Undertaker, it was too much. So in some cases maybe like if I was to make one request, that when it's like really kind of obvious, maybe that something is like has to, you have to get rid of it. Maybe, hopefully, it wouldn't be 6 months. It would be a little bit faster. So that might be like, so maybe it's a learning process. Like maybe Patreon will get nerfed in 1 month. Then we are looking back. Okay, it could have been nerfed a little bit faster. So maybe that's something that will change. That when something is really a huge problem, that the reaction will be faster. Maybe.
Yeah. So one thing I will address, and one issue I do have with Patron, which I feel like is probably the main reason to change it or to consider changing it, is just the whole notion of it's not fun to play against. And I kind of want to get your opinions on that and what you guys think of it, because you know in the past there have been decks that usually combo decks, that or freeze mage decks that don't have a ton of interact, or people say they don't have a lot of interactivity, therefore it's like it's not fun to play against. And I haven't necessarily thought like that badly about it, because I kind of think it's cool kind of preparing for, you know, in anticipation of what's coming and preparing for that. But I think the biggest complaint against Paizen is just that it's not fun to play against at all. And I want to see if you guys agree with that sentiment. Bray?
Right, well...
Oh, is he frozen? I guess he's frozen. All right, one of you guys. Noxious?
I feel like Patron's actually pretty fun overall. Like, I love the deck. I love watching people play it. The thing is, the only reason, as I said, you know, we kind of complain about it is because there's so much of it. It's not because the deck in and of itself is a problem. Mm-hmm. I think it's a pretty cool deck, high skill demand in tournaments. We just see too much of it because of the format, potentially, so that's one of the issues as well. I don't mind the deck. I mean, I feel like I don't complain about Freeze Mage. I used to, you know, back when, you know, Blizzard was 5 and Kona Cole was 3 and everything was like completely out of whack with, you know, even your ability to just put something down on the board. That was just impossible. Whereas Patreon, I feel like there is some level of play you can make against it. And even though they are playing solitaire in a way, where they're trying to dig through their deck, you do get to attack them, which is not the case with the old Freeze Mage. And I venture to say that Miracle Rogue could also come back, and it wouldn't even be broken in the way that it might have felt like it was before, just because we have some counterplay in it, like against it now. And I don't know, Patron to me is fine as far as a deck archetype. Maybe it's a bit over the top, but I wouldn't say that it's like, crazily out there.
Okay. Yeah. Savitz? What do you think about that? Just the sentiment that it's not fun to play.
I'm really confused something going on here. But okay, I think that it's a really cool deck. It's really high skill gap and all. But just like the fact how it deals the damage from the hand instead of on the board negates so many board control type of strategies that I'm not happy with that. Like, there's so many cool things that could be done with Shaman. There's so many cool things that could be done with maybe Priest, like juggling for board control, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. But just like, it's so hard to interact with that. It's a lot of cool strategies that we would see otherwise are now unplayable.
Ray, sentiments on the unfun argument.
I think that, first of all, people will never have fun in a game they're losing, or very rarely will have fun in a game that they lose.
Right.
So, I think that, I don't know, the games that you lose to Patron are a lot more memorable than the games that you beat it. Because the games that you beat it just kind of flounders and armors up, and you play stuff and kill them and pat yourself on the back like, oh, I really outplayed that Patron player. In reality, like, you know, they misplayed or they drew bad or something. And the games you lose to it are, you know, you are getting wrecked for infinite damage from hand. So it's, you all right, Savitz?
I have no idea. I have no.
We can still see you fine, so it's
okay. I have like my just like I can't see my. I can't see you guys. I can't see myself. But okay,
it's okay. So, we see and hear you.
Yeah,
it's a great program.
Oh, okay. This feels weird.
Yeah, no, that's my only thing about Patreon. And I think that even if it got nerfed, a lot of the control like deck type of things would always be weak to some combo deck that exists. Mm-hmm. Because there's so many ways to do it, thanks to Emperor Thorsen. I can do like Warlock OTKs from hand. I can do Rogue combos. Like any big Blade Flurry will destroy any like fair slow deck. So I think like those decks will always inherently have weaknesses to combo decks. And I don't think that removing Patron would all of a sudden make them playable. I think they would just lose to a different combo deck.
Okay.
Yeah, it's possible. It might be also an issue that it's Warrior doing the combo, because Warrior can heal above 30 and the removal with the weapons is so efficient. So maybe it would be still better if that kind of like strategies were on different classes than Warrior.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
I know what you mean.
Things like Sap are good removal, Backstab, Abyss, Flurry. Like, it's, you know, Rogue has that. If you want healing, you can play Healbot or whatever. Every deck has access to kind of everything, I guess, just because... Warrior's definitely the best at doing it, I agree.
Do you think that there would be like another deck that would surface then, which would be like, okay, everyone is playing, if you're playing combo deck, it would be let's say mage deck, you would be playing mage combo deck, or would it maybe be spread out more, that maybe there would be some playing shaman control and some playing rogue, or like some shaman combo, some playing rogue combo, or is it always going to drift towards that one being so supreme?
Well, the thing about the combo deck is it really just preys on slow things like Ramp Druid, control decks, all of that. So if there's two combo decks, one of them is usually better, so it'll have like they'll have the same matchups that are favorable, but one will usually just be a little bit better. So I think most of the time there'd just be like one combo deck.
Yeah.
Yeah, but can you see yourself running two combos in a three deck type of format? Probably not, right? Like you probably only carry one combo deck for the most part.
Right.
There would have to be a slow control-y deck that's popular, and then I would play like three combo decks to try to 3-0 it.
Wow. Wow, but okay.
That's really, unless like Dragon Priest becomes dominant in Conquest, which, you know, it's not going to happen. The Conquest decks all have very good plans for doing too much damage from hand or Molten, Sun Fury type stuff. So, yeah.
All right. So let's see. Next question from Bryn Hall. Question about Hearthstone in Japan here. Love the show. Question to anyone with an opinion about how do you feel about Hearthstone taking off in Japan soon? Are there any players we should look out for if a competitive scene comes out there? Do you think the game will do well since mobile games are huge in Japan now, more so than console, PC, gaming combined the last time I checked? Noxious, what do you think? Do you know much about Japan and gaming there?
It's kind of surprising because I don't remember the last time there was a port from a Blizzard game to Japan. Maybe I'm just mistaken historically, but I don't remember that directly. I'm not too sure exactly. I don't know any of the players there. I don't know any of the card game scenes. I don't know if anybody will even come on Hearthstone as a powerhouse. And even then, we're kind of dissociated in a weird way from the Asian scene by default. And Japan might have its own microcosm of tournaments, and as a result, we might never even see them. So as far as the players that we have to look out for, it's a shot in the dark. Like, I have no idea. No clue.
Yeah, any of you guys know anything about the Japan scene?
Well, I'm not really like when it comes to Hearthstone, but I do know that the Magic the Gathering is absolutely massive in there. Mm-hmm. So they do like card games, and I'm actually a bit surprised that we haven't up to this point, we haven't seen multiple players come out of Japan and to just have a good time and do well, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. Oh, go ahead, Ray.
Yeah, and Magic, the players I respect the most were definitely Japanese. Like, a lot of them were very good. What's Watanabe was, I'm pretty sure, Japanese. Watanabe is, I think, the best Magic player in the world, really, for a long time. So, they have a really developed scene for Magic. It's weird that we haven't seen them in Hearthstone much.
Yeah. I mean, the population in Japan, obviously, is not even close to China, so purely by numbers. I mean, there's probably better chance that a large number of players come from China or good players. But mobile games is enormous in Japan, like a ton of money, I can tell you, just from working in the mobile business. So, Hearthstone, even just from business standpoint for Blizzard, Japan is a great place for Hearthstone to really explode. It'd be really cool. Yeah, I mean, just more regions or more countries to have great players to come from. Okay, let's see. Oscar Vatic. Reynad, will you play the next ATLC, or do you think the lineups will stay the same? It's a huge tournament, and I feel TS would be stronger with you.
I think the players we had play are very good. The thing is, I'm really busy, and it's a great way to give players on my team exposure.
He just owns, a bunch of...
The thing about the Temple Storm brand is I try to have it... I've been doing it since I started, is I tried to not make it Team Reynad as much as possible. I don't want to do Team Reynad hosting Reynad's tournaments hosted by Reynad on Reynad's channel with Reynad as team captain playing on Team Reynad. That's not, how I want to do a team. I don't think that's sustainable long-term, so... it's a good way to give our players more exposure, and I'd like to give the players on our team a chance to have more camera time, so I'd rather not take a slot away from that.
All right, fair enough. Zach Cavaretta asks, what do you think of adding Enhanso Meccano into Secret Pally?
I think it's fine if you're playing a more Silverhand region approach, which is mostly flood the board with a bunch of stuff, double quartermaster, mid-range type of Secret Pally. It could be kind of fun. I just don't know if it's ever going to be better than the typical variant on it. Because, you'd have to have a pretty big board, and Paladin gets 1-1s. How good is a 1-1 with Taunt? Probably just as good as a 1-1 without Taunt. And how good is a, you'd have to have a Quartermaster on the board prior to that to make it worth it. And I don't know, a 4-mana investment for that when it's just going to be a 3-2 for 4 most of the time doesn't feel like something I'd be happy to put in. But you can try it out. I mean, if it works out, just make the new meta.
All right, last question from Ruoka, and it's actually addressed to Savitz, but I think I'll just generalize it to all you guys. Do you get recognized a lot in public? Savitz, since it's addressed to you, I'll ask you first.
Actually, like around my hometown, I do. Like when I go to a nightclub or something, it's happened quite a few times. Oh, but when I'm abroad, it's not very common. Or when I'm like in other cities, it's happened a few times. But mostly in Finland, it's really rare to get recognized. We did when we were traveling to Irvine like 2 weeks ago. We actually were on the air, but we landed in Chicago, and we had been in the U.S. for 5 minutes, and like on the line, like the security line, somebody was like, "Are you Savage?" So that happened. But in general, it's usually related to the esports events or like a area where I like live around, because people maybe know to like look out for me more.
Yeah. Noxious? Anad?
Not really. I mean, it happened once at like convenience store. I just moved like 6 months ago, and I went to the convenience store, and some girl behind the counter recognized me, but like it doesn't happen that often. Probably more in the U.S., I'd imagine, or in EU. But even then, it's like, why would I be there? They wouldn't search for me. So,
right?
Back when I was in Minnesota, it wasn't happening. But then I moved to California, and it started. Like the first week, I went to the DMV, and somebody recognized me there. And it's happened in like that area. I spent a few hours with Kranich actually in an airport, and it happened there. And it comes up once in a while, you know. A lot of times in airports when I'm traveling and those kinds of places, mostly always at esports events. But yeah, just in public, it's only happened a few times, surprisingly rarely. We were in Burbank one time, I guess, with Dan, watching like some street performer guy, and some people came up to us and noticed both of us. But it's not that common, you know. Maybe like once a month, twice a month.
It's just that question is like more of, I think, generally a barometer of, you know, how, I guess, how much exposure, right, our community or even just esports to a degree has gotten in the recent times. But that's cool. It's actually great that people recognize you guys around around the world and that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah. Actually, one funny story about that. This was like some months ago. I've been recognized at the airport so a few times, but or a couple of times. This was this security guard who walked up to me, and he was like, "Hey," and just like pointing at me and stuff. And I'm like, "What?" And then he was like, "Can I take a selfie with you? You're Savitz, right?" I said it in Finnish. I was like, "Okay." We took a selfie and they tweeted it at me. It was pretty funny. That was like a couple of months ago.
Right. Yeah, that is definitely awesome. Imagine if you're like Hollywood celebrity and you have to deal with that like every day. That'd be pretty crazy.
Yeah, no. I'd rather not.
Yeah, in a few years. Yeah, I know. I'm not sure you would want to or not by that time.
Oh, we'll say, yeah, Micro Center and Fry's, both times I've gone to like these electronics stores that happen. Like a couple days ago, I got this parts for this PC. Whoa. Too. So just the people that are more tech.
Any discounts, any perks for being, for them knowing you?
No, not really. one guy
was like, "This is useless."
Yeah, I was like, "Oh man!" Yeah.
I was ordering computer parts, and this guy was like, "Oh, what are you going to be doing with it? What do you need?" And I'll be like, "Oh, I need a bunch of programs running. I'm streaming games. Do you know what Twitch is?" He's like, "Yeah, I know what Twitch is." And the guy next to him, he's like, "Oh, it's Rained." And that's it. And then I paid full price for everything, like a pleb.
That's better than me, because one time I was in the bathroom. Going to the bathroom, and the guy's like, we're just staring at the wall, and he's like, "I like your show Unfiltered, man." I'm like, "What?" I'm like, "What?"
That was awkward.
Yeah, that was creepy, man. But I was like, "Oh, thanks, man." We're both like staring at the wall. Like the whole time. That was pretty funny. But all right, guys, I think that's going to be it for the show. It's a great show. Having three of you guys, I thought some great, good discussions, and really happy about just being able to kind of, again, introduce some more variety to Valuetown and, having you guys participate. Well, one thing I did want to, address the viewers is, thanks, guys, for all the Q&A. But also, I wanted to do some more segments on Valuetown. And some of the segments, I might need a little help from you guys. I wanted to do some things like kind of board analysis, like snapshots of a board, you know, like what's a good play type of thing, kind of going through that. We used to do that actually a while back in Valuetown. And I used to like come up with a screenshot. So if you guys have any kind of situation in the games, you don't know how to handle it, be sure to just send those over to me at chris@chamanv.tv. And we'll try to incorporate into the show. Also, if you got any decks, you know, I'd like to do a kind of help a deck or pimp your deck type of, you know, segment, maybe even play some of the decks, you know, after we've helped improve the decks. Go ahead and send those too, and we'll try to get those on the show. Really, really appreciate that. But yeah, guys, Noxious, Savitz, Raynad, any shout outs you guys want to do? Start off with you, Noxious.
No, nothing really. Nope.
Nope. Nothing. All right. Savitz?
Yeah, shout out to Doc, who just joined our team. It's good to have him on board and like the Liquid guys. And yeah, the NA regionals take this week, and it's going to be awesome. So mm-hmm. I recommend people to, well, not regionals, it's championships, sorry. So mm-hmm. I recommend people to tune in. I'll be the only European there, I guess. But I'll be casting, obviously. Yeah.
Ray?
Yeah, shout out to the team. Shout out to Doc. It's cool that he joined Liquid. It definitely is a good fit. And then, yeah, shout out to Valuetown, first time on Tempestorm channel. That's cool. Tempestorm.com for all your Becoming Legendary needs. That's it.
No shirt ad.
The usual stuff. I mean, I don't know the energy right now. All the ads are down here in the...
Yeah, okay, logos are down there. And, yeah, I want to thank you, the three of you guys, obviously, for coming on. Obviously, Tempestorm for sponsoring the show. And all you guys for watching. The VODs, guys, will be up very, very soon on youtube.com/ChamanV, my channel. And the audios, if you guys haven't noticed on your iPods or your iPads or your iPhones, it's actually being updated now, so you can actually find Valuetown on iTunes, and it's fully up to date. That will obviously be included for this week too. And I'll keep uploading it to SoundCloud too, just for the folks that don't have iTunes. But we're going to try to do this day. Like, I know one thing about Valuetown is we've been kind of jumping all over the place, but we're going to try our best to do Wednesdays at 1 as consistently as possible. So kind of, you know, plan that. Hopefully you can plan that, you know, each and every week. There will be some exceptions if we do, like, arenas, because I do want, like, guys like Crip and those guys involved with those type of shows or arena-centric shows. So it may jump around from time to time for those. But for the most part, plan on Wednesdays, guys. But yeah, that's going to be it for Valuetown, guys. So for Noxious, Savitz, Raynad, and Chanman V, we'll see you next time. Later. Bye.